Councillors, management, members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team after the meeting. May I ask that all mobile phones be turned to silent for the duration of the meeting. The agenda comprises 6 reports from management. We've received no apologies. Could I make a brief statement in relation to the events of January 20 in the Bourke Street Mall. Melbourne is a city of people and communities that have been brought together by the recent Bourke Street heartbreaking tragedy. As people stood dazed and others lay wounded and dying, compassion and composure prevailed from emergency services, volunteers and health professionals and everyday remarkable people who stepped up in the midst of the shocking events of that day. Our city has shared the pain and grief and loss and felt anger, bafflement, shock and sadness. As a community, however, we are united in love and compassion. Together we remember and take some comfort that times of adversity are soothed by an outpouring of care, affection and empathy. Would you mind joining me by standing in a moment of silence to reflect and pay our respect to those who died, those who were injured, those who were affected and their loved ones? Thank you. Please be seated. Could I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. A request has been made by The Age, The Herald Sun, ABC TV, ABC Radio and 7 News to film the meeting specifically in relation to agenda item 6.2. Could I ask council to move a motion that the Future Melbourne Committee resolves to allow filming of the Future Melbourne Committee in accordance with the request made by the media outlets? Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, Secretary Councillor Oak. I'll put that matter. All those in favour? That is unanimous. Thank you. If any councillor has a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a council to move a resolution adopting minutes of open meeting number 4, held on the 13th of December 2016? Deputy Lord Mayor, seconded, Councillor Kafer. I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That's unanimous. Thank you. Are there any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting? As at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the Council's Conduct of Meetings Local Law 2010. In relation to Agenda Item 6.1, Metro Tunnel Project and Management of Bourke and Wills Memorial, requests to speak from David Dodd, Chris Thrum and Mike Flatley, an item for correspondence from David Dodd, Chris Thrum and Mike Flatley. In relation to Agenda Item 6.2, Homelessness and Public Amenity, requests to speak from David Tweed, Andrew Klein, Dave Burrows, Duncan Storer, Kate Hunley, David Wilson, Kate Colvin, Rebecca Temple, Mark Tyler, Homeless Persons Union Victoria, Lisa Peterson, Rachel Zubikic, Lucy Adams, Ty Snotier, and Kate Brown, and items of correspondence detailed in the minutes from 24 different individuals and organisations. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, Ministerial Referral 51 to 65 Clark Street, Southbank, request to speak from Tony Penner. And in relation to Agenda Item 6.5, 69 Hardiman Street, Kensington, request to speak from Peter Sweeney, John Glossop, and items of correspondence from Carolyn Sebastian, Paul and Andrew McAlpin, John Glossop, and Peter Sweeney. I advise submitters that you're invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. You have 3 minutes to address the committee. We adhere to that 3-minute time limit. The bell rings at the completion of 2 minutes, signalling you have 1 minute remaining. Another bell signals the time allotted to you has finished, and we ask you to conclude then. In accordance with the Council Resolution of 26 March 2013, a 15-minute period is provided at the beginning and the end of this meeting for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds duration. And I remind members of the public, this is not the time to make submissions on agenda items to be considered tonight. Submitters are invited to address the committee at the time the agenda item is considered. Does anyone like to ask us a question? Thank you.
Shane Scanlon, CBD News. My question's to you, Lord Mayor. It's relating to the 11th councillor position and in particular your conversation with Warren Gately on December 6th. And my question is, do you think it was appropriate to make that call?
Yes.
What did you say?
I asked him what the Electoral Commission's view was.
You didn't put your position?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, yes.
I'm sorry, I've got like no formal education, so I don't really understand the parameters or the boundaries of what I'm allowed to and what I aren't.
You're doing okay so far. Just ask us.
What I'm going to say is going to take 2 minutes. Can I just read it, please?
As long as it's not concerned with an agenda item tonight.
I don't have an agenda except for like people's welfare and stuff.
I'm not going to play pretends with you. If it's about item 6.2, which is about homelessness,
you're lucky. I left my speech in the bag I got searched for.
You can still
but
make
what
a speech.
I'd like to say is back in October a few years ago, I was homeless and I was living at Flinders Street Station, and I was invited to a soup kitchen at the Melbourne Square. And about half an hour later, a cage got built around me. And I was mentally ill, I am mentally ill, and homeless. I've been homeless since I was 14. And the police stole everything I own. They stole my swag, they stole my medication, my wallet, everything. And this was because Starbucks had complained about a mess out in front of their business. But they were paying $500 rent and no taxes. I don't care about that. What I care about is my brain damage and trauma and the fact that these powers that you're like presenting towards fixing this problem of this mess on the street are actually just going to exacerbate the situation and create a situation where we're all thrown through court for assault, for resisting arrest.
I'm going to show you a bit of leniency.
No, you're not. I'm going to continue talking. Sorry, mate.
No, mate, you're not.
Because you've kicked my brain in and you've stolen everything
I'm sorry.
At your order. So
I'm
just going to keep talking, or you can arrest
insult.
Me. Arrest
you
me if you want.
To be taken seriously.
I don't care. I don't care about being taken seriously, mate. I'm a mentally ill, homeless person.
I've just recently
received commission housing. I access homelessness services, and I will be for some time to try and manage my way into this new society, which I've never been allowed to be a part of. Now, the homelessness community that's gathered at Melbourne is because all the services are basically centred in Melbourne. So by the time that you've gone from Fitzroy for your GP clinic to North Melbourne for your drug and alcohol clinic to St Vinny's Hospital to wherever, at the end of the day, it's a full-time job to maintain your position on that list of people who are going to be provided with housing. And if you don't attend the appointments, you're cut off. So you have to stay here. And at the end of the day, that's a full-time job. That's working harder than you. And you fall asleep and you're exhausted. Now, I've sat there with my hernia hanging out, having to drag my fucking swag in one hand and my dog in the other, manage all these appointments, and still, like, the police have move-along orders and move-along, And now you're sitting there saying, well, if you've got stuff out, we're going to confiscate all your stuff. But, that's just going to, create a situation, provoke triggers, get people arrested for more charges. Just the other day, I attended a protest at Flinders Street Station. The police grabbed a woman and they slammed her on her head. I went in and tried to stop them from, beating this woman up, and I was, portrayed as a feral and as a violent criminal through the media, through every single media, except one person held their video camera up and filmed the actual real thing of the police slamming her head into the ground. And that's what I'm talking about, and that's why I'm here today, because that's what's really going to happen, all right?
Thank you for your submission.
It's not just a submission, mate. It's a fact. If you want a riot, we will give you a fucking riot. This is Melbourne, mate. This isn't your fucking political career. This is Melbourne. Fuck you.
And thank you. I try to remain courteous, even when all else fails. I sincerely hope that's not the tenor of the way that we deal with each other. I sincerely hope that. Could I now call on Councillor Leppert to assume the role of Chair in relation to the Arts, Culture and Heritage portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There's one report from management for consideration under this portfolio, and that is Agenda Item 6.1, Metro Tunnel Project and Management of Burke and Wills Memorial. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No. In that case, I will first call on David Dodd on behalf of the Burke and Wills Historical Society Incorporated, who requested the opportunity to address the committee. David, you've got up to 3 minutes to address the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and councillors. My name's David Dodd. I'm an executive member of the Burke and Wills Historical Society. I was the project officer for the 150th anniversary of the commemoration of the Burke and Wills Expedition 2010-2011. I'm speaking to you this evening on behalf of the Society, although both the Royal Society of Victoria and the Historical Society have worked closely together, and my colleague Michael Flatley will speak on behalf of the Royal Society. Your councillors have received a submission documenting the material which the Society submitted to the Melbourne Metropolitan Rail Authority's Advisory Committee last year. The Society made this submission to the Authority for the first time the fate of the Burke and Wills statue was brought into the public domain. The Society has examined the management report and the recommendations now before you. And we had looked at the key issues which have been put forward to underpin the recommendations on the screen. We note the two recommendations, 11.1 and 11.2, concern are really by delegation, and we have no concern about those. We applaud the City Council for moving the Burke and Wills statue away from a major construction zone. We were concerned initially that it was going to be wrapped up in bubble plastic and left there for the duration, but reason has prevailed, and I think the Melbourne Metropolitan Rail Authority has asked you to remove it. The issue that I have is with the recommendation 11.3, or if I may go back to 11.2, we have looked at the advisory panel's recommendation, and we note that they are concerned about the storage of the Burke and Wills statue for a term of up to 8 years, and that it will be removed from the public gaze and public consciousness. So we would like to see that recommendation too amended to empower the committee, or require the council, to arrange for a static display downstairs so that the Burke and Wills statue can be at least remembered while it's in storage. It's important. The Society and both societies have written a lot of documents and published books to do with the 150th, and the general interest in the city and along the Burke and Wills track into other states is quite amazing. So we don't want to see that gone.
Thank you, Mr. Dodd. I'm afraid that's 3 minutes. I'm afraid that's 3 minutes.
Oh, my God. Can I just say, I hope that...
Very briefly, thank you.
A three-minute discussion won't put the devil into the Burke and Wills fountain. I think we must ensure that it's part of Melbourne, but please relocate it.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Dodd? No. Thank you very much. We'll now call on Chris Thrum to speak for up to 3 minutes. Chris, are you here?
Yep.
Hi, Chris.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert, Lord Mayor, councillors, men and women of Old Melbourne Town. This is the agenda item regarding the Burke and Wills Memorial, and I support the recommendations from the management group So 11.1, 11.2, 11.3 for the removal, the restoration, and the return of the Burke Wills Memorial. I'd just like to briefly mention that there is the cultural significance of this memorial in regards to the fact that it's not just a statue, it's also a memorial to the entire expedition. Underneath the statue, you'll find that there's like bas reliefs depicting sort of scenes from the expedition. And one of the scenes beneath the statue of Burke and Wills commemorates the relationship that the Yandruwanda Aboriginals in sort of the northeastern sector of South Australia had with the expedition. When Wills and Burke were dying, they had with them a companion called John King. And he reached out to the Yandruwanda, and they embraced him, welcomed him to country, looked after him, cared for him. And one of the depictions on the bas-relief explains and depicts the scene where the Yandruwanda returned to the site where Burke's body was lying in posterity, or in death. And they were concerned and upset about King's loss. So I think the important thing is that when this statue is returned to the present site as part of the Reconciliation Action Program of Melbourne City Council, it will be appropriate perhaps to invite members of the Yandruwanda tribe to Melbourne to commemorate the event. And I'd like to thank the officers for the time and effort they've put into the report. And I respect the Royal Society and their opinion in regards to removing the statue to a new location, and the Burke and Wills Historical Society as well. However, in this instance, I do agree with the report from the management that we return the statue, and I can assure that the previous speaker that Melburnians will remember Burke and Wills while they're being restored.
Thank you so much, Chris. Any questions for Mr. Thrum? No? Thank you, Chris. I now call on Mike Flatley of the Royal Society of Victoria to address the committee for up to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors for the opportunity to speak. I'm the CEO of the Royal Society of Victoria and I'm representing our President, Dr. William Birch AM. Our position, as I've outlined, as Bill has outlined in his letter to you all, is that we would very much like the statue to be relocated. The Royal Society of Victoria was instrumental in bringing the expedition together, and we are located currently in one of the most significant heritage precincts in Melbourne. It's a World Heritage Zone, UNESCO World Heritage, and perhaps the most preserved precinct in Melbourne of a 19th century character. Now, say what you like about City Square, but it is no longer a 19th century square, and the Burke and Wills statue is now looking implacably at the side of a bank. The expedition aimed to find a northern passage, and we would very much like to offer the council our land and an opportunity for the two explorers to come home and to also direct their gaze northward instead of westward into a financial institution. Further, we think that the inclusion of the Burke and Wills statue should also be accompanied by a suitable recognition of the compassion and care the Yandruwanda people showed to the sole survivor of that expedition. And the relocation of the statue, I think, is a wonderful opportunity to also concoct or develop a suitable token of appreciation from the people of Victoria and the people of Melbourne for the care of their nation, their nation member, their citizen, from one nation to another. And I would recommend that course of action, whatever the final location of the statue may be. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flatley. Any councillors have any questions? No, thank you. We'll now move on to the debate proper, and I'll move the motion in the same form as the recommendation from management, and I call on councillor to second it. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Now, I'll be disappointing the Royal Society of Victoria and the Burke and Wills Historical Society in moving the motion unamended. However, I'll do so for three reasons. The debate was had extensively in 1993, and whilst that is not recent, there isn't a significant change to the parameters of that debate. But what we've got at the moment with the Metro Rail authority proposal is a change to dramatically change the city, a proposal to dramatically change the city, I beg your pardon. Above and beyond the reasons that are set out here in the report, I believe that retaining Burke and Wills on that site is quite an important symbol of the continuity that we're going to see after the Metro Rail project is completed. I think that that is its current space, place for the statue, and should remain the current the place for the statue. And so I will politely disagree with the Royal Society and Burke and Wills Historical Society and side with the officers. But the final page in this report is the most important one to me. The Art and Heritage Collection Advisory Panel of the City has met to consider this matter and has unanimously recommended to us that we take this particular course of action. I think we need very strong reasons to not go with their advice. A very strong case has been made to us, but I'm not swayed on this occasion, and so I will be supporting the recommendation to us. Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Leppett. I too agree with you. I think the two salient points being the officer recommendation, but also the independent view on the fact that the statue should remain in City Square. So I acknowledge that the Royal Society has put forward its case over a number of years, but I'm comfortable that City Square is the right place for this statue to return to.
Any other councillors like to contribute to this debate? Councillor Roke?
I support the recommendation. I guess the one thing that I heard, not only from our speakers but in our submission, was their love of and recognition of the historical significance of this statue and the need to make sure that as many visitors have the ability to visit and know about the historic, the story of Burke and Wills. And so I guess I look to officers, whilst not suggesting to change the recommendation, but to take that on board that it is going to be a significant period of time that the public or visitors can't see this statue, and whilst it might be in storage, there must be ways and means either through our visitors centre or downstairs at Town Hall where we can make sure that we remind people that it does exist and it's coming back and provide the enough information to remind people of its story. I think that I heard that there is a concern of its loss, that it will lose its appeal as a tourist destination, but hopefully as Councillor Leppett mentioned, in the new City Square, whatever it may look like, it will be in a prominent position in the city of the future.
Any other councillors wish to contribute to this debate? Councillor Watts.
Thank you. I'm reluctantly supporting this motion. I make no sense of the situation where a major piece of cultural history in Australia is put away for 8 years, potentially. I think a relocation at this point is warranted, but having raised this with officers... Oh, my chair is dropping through the floor. this has been widely discussed with colleagues and officers, and I don't have the sympathy of some on council for suggesting that it's important to put this piece back in its historic context, and we've had submissions which eloquent submissions, which I found persuasive. We all know that the statue needs to be taken care of. We all love it. We're accustomed to it being in the City Square, but it doesn't mean to say that's where it should have been. I imagine in the 8 years we've got ahead of us before it's actually repositioned, there may well be time for further debate on this matter. I worry that the Arts and Heritage Committee, I wonder if they were asked the sorts of questions that have been put to us tonight. I commend those who brought all of these to our attention.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Any more contributions to this debate? No, in that case, I'll close the debate and put the motion. All those in favour, please raise your hand. I declare that carried unanimously. And I call on Deputy Lord Mayor Aaron Wood to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the Finance and Governance portfolio.
There's one report from management for consideration under the Finance and Governance portfolio. That's Agenda Item 6.2, the Homelessness and Public Amenity Agenda Item. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No. We'll jump to our submitters. We've got a lot of submitters this evening. I just ask that you stick to your 3 minutes as a courtesy to all the submitters that are wishing to speak this evening. As the Lord Mayor said at the start of the meeting, you have 3 minutes. You'll then hear a bell and you've got a minute to wrap up. So I now call on our first speaker, David Tweed, to address the committee. David Tweed. David not here. I now call on Andrew Klein to address the committee. Andrew Klein.
Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know whether you've read my email submission. I'd just like to briefly put it into context. The current proposed legislation will not be a solution, but simply move the problem elsewhere. Melbourne is such a beautiful city, we could create a new way of dealing with people facing homelessness. That may be of interest to those that like to see visitors come to Melbourne and learn how we deal humanely with homelessness. The legislation as is proposed simply puts another burden on people going through a crisis in their lives. No matter how long that crisis is, our current system has not addressed it. And there are many reasons for this. And I think it's preemptive to pass that legislation at this point in time. Council should look at other options, safe spaces, lockers, all kinds of things that can be examined, and discuss these items with members of the homeless community, which is easily done. You walk around, you spend quality time, you learn. I cannot speak for the homeless community because I don't represent them, but I've spoken with them, and I've also had a lived experience of homelessness. And that is something I personally would never want to have to relive. But if we provide, from my view, safe spaces, venues where people can get support, currently existing services are in Melbourne. He's all right. Deaf.
Please continue.
Currently, the existing services that people come to in Melbourne from the homeless community, they come here because they are here. They're nowhere else in the suburbs. I can take people to the eastern suburbs. There are no services. So we're further pushing people to the edge, and we can't afford to do it. Let's remain humane in all we do. Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, councillors.
Thanks, Andrew. Any questions for Andrew? Andrew, you may take a seat. Thank you. I now call on Dave Burrows to speak. Dave Burrows, the applause is, you're welcome to it, but people are going to struggle to hear their names being called out as well. Dave Burrows. Dave Burrows here? No? I now call on Duncan Storer to address the committee. Duncan Storer? No. Kate Hamley. Kate, you have 3 minutes.
Good evening, councillors. I'm speaking on behalf of David Burrows and Duncan Storer. So we're from the group Freedom from Poverty, and homelessness is a massive issue in Melbourne. But putting through these bylaws, all it's going to do is push people out of the CBD and into other municipalities that don't have the resources and the support for them. Sweeping it under the rug isn't going to fix it. And you can't end homelessness by hiding it. You can't shift your responsibility for the people of Melbourne and push it into other places. And Band-Aid solutions aren't going to fix this. You guys have the power to change this. You have the power to put pressure on the state governments and federal governments and actually solve these issues humanely and properly and with respect to the dignity of the people who are involved. Homelessness isn't a lifestyle choice, but you definitely can help people to get out of it. We need you to fulfil your responsibilities as elected public representatives and work for all the people of Melbourne. Anything less means that you are consciously choosing to abandon people and push them into destitution. Do you want to be remembered as the council that has done that to people? Or do you want to be remembered as the council that did the right thing by all the people of Melbourne? I'd love to hear a response from all of you.
Thanks, Kate. Any questions for Kate? Kate, you may take a seat. I now call on David Wilson. David, you've got 3 minutes. Thank you.
Lord Mayor, councillors, I speak to you as the CEO of Urban Seed, which is a community development agency here in the city that works with those who are experiencing marginalisation. And thanks for this opportunity to address the committee. I've written a submission for your perusal, and I'd like to highlight three things here. I sat where you're sitting a number of years ago. It was the time of the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne, and there was great concern about the homeless population. There were suggestions floated that we could rid Melbourne's streets of rough sleepers in those days, but the City of Melbourne stood up against that on human rights grounds, and Melbourne became a champion city for all people through its homelessness protocol. I urge Council to consider the issues before you now from the same perspective. The second thing I want to say, the draft amendments before you tonight include a redefinition of camping that could be read as outlawing rough sleeping. Paragraph 2.8 includes the words, quote, in a car, tent, caravan, or any type of temporary or provisional form of accommodation, close quote. The lack of clarity around, quote, any type of temporary or provisional form of accommodation, close quote, is where my concern lies. If this extends to a rollout mattress and or a swag and or blankets, then it effectively outlaws rough sleeping and is therefore antithetical to the city's homelessness protocol. I urge the council to address this lack of clarity to make sure that rough sleeping is not outlawed in the city. The third thing I want to say, there are ways and means to address these issues so that the rights of all people are addressed. For example, lockers could be provided for rough sleepers to store their gear during the day, and drop-in centres established around the city to give them a place to belong during the day where services could be provided. At Urban Seed, we're ready to work with Council, Victoria Police and service providers to address the problems of street homelessness. We bring over 21 years of experience in community development and place management, personnel trained and experienced in these areas, city property that can be utilised, and a generally good reputation with those experiencing marginalisation here in the city. Papers presented to Council have to include impact statements. What impact will this decision have on the economy of the city, the environment, the social structure? When I was on Council, we added an impact. How would it affect the children in the city? Because we're attempting to become a registered child-friendly city. I suggest to you tonight that the most important impact to consider is how will this decision affect the city's most vulnerable. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, David. Questions for David? Let's go. I now call on Kate Colvin to address the committee. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks. I'd like to thank the councillors for the opportunity to speak. So I'm Kate Colvin. I'm the acting CEO of Council to Homeless Persons, which is the peak of the homeless sector. I just ask councillors tonight in voting on this motion that you prioritise, like the speaker before me said, that you do no harm to people who are already vulnerable. The proposal to expand the definition of camping will cause considerable harm to people who are homeless. It's just simply too broad. And, we've heard some commentary in the media and others that there is people who are not homeless who are occupying space in the city, and that this is intended to address that. And I really ask you to consider that it will actually deeply affect people who are homeless. If it affects others as well, the point is to consider what impact it will have on people who are homeless. The first impact that it will have, of course, is that it will increase people's interaction with the justice system. We know that has a devastating impact on people. It's never a help or an assistance. It always tends to pull people down further. They'll end up with fines which they cannot pay. They'll end up with arrests for reacting to council officers, and increase in imprisonment will be a consequence of that. But it also asks you to consider the impact that it has on people's mental well-being. We know that exclusion from society is terrible for people's mental health. So at a low point, when people have nowhere else to go, they're going to be approached by a council officer saying that they can't be where they are, where they're just simply lying down in the street, because the definition is so broad that we can't see how it will not prevent people from simply being able to lie down on a piece of cardboard or a simple swag. They will be told that they have to leave, that they've been subjected to a fine when they have nowhere else to go. This is taking away some very basic rights that people have. It's really compromising people's dignity. Effectively, we feel like it's saying to people that they shouldn't exist. I repeat again that excluding people is simply devastating for their mental health. So each of these impacts, both increasing people's interaction with the justice system and compromising their mental health, further marginalises people who are already being pushed to the margin by the limits of what society has provided. So terrible cost to homeless people. So whatever you might think that it might achieve, please keep in mind that it will have that appalling cost on people who are already very vulnerable. It's simply too great a consequence of this amendment. So we ask you to ensure that this amendment proceeds no further tonight by not putting it to public consultation and just proceeding instead with the other matters that have been put forward in the proposal. Of course, appointing Bernie Geary to the role that's been proposed would be useful, and I think there's been some other measures. Communications campaign may also be useful. But
thanks.
The second point...
Sorry, thanks, Kate. 3 minutes.
That's apologies. Three?
Yeah,
right.
Apologies.
Thanks.
Any questions for Kate? Rebecca Temple. I'm calling Rebecca Temple. It's questions from councillors. Calling Rebecca Temple.
Good evening. I strongly urge the media to stop vilifying homeless people. The greatest... I've only got 3 minutes. The greatest obstacle to rational thought is narcissism. The fantasy that we are perfectly formed, that we are without schizophrenia, alcoholism, addiction, brain damage, chronic illness and trauma, and that we have a healthy family home and support network to catch us if we need their help. I'm without many of these, but I'm not without a chronic invisible illness with multiple morbidities. I'm not. I'm not without a highly abusive family pattern of narcissistic abuse. I'm not without grieving the loss of my sister from suicide because of that abuse. But I'm full of empathy and I have a conscience and I'm currently homeless. Robert Doyle. This is the third time in my life that I've been homeless and it's due to family violence this time. And I'm on DSP. The only difference to the people at Flinders Street Station is that I'm lucky enough to have a car. You've callously banned those people from Flinders Street. I cannot be put into emergency housing either because I have a best friend and I have a daughter who is of the fairy kind. And she's adorable and I refuse to leave her. I feel disempowered, vulnerable, insecure and scared. I'm okay. And I feel lucky enough that I get to sleep in a car. I got into honours degree at Victoria University this year to major in psychology. I've got a science degree as well. I've worked in research, which is a non-industry anymore in this country. And I'm petrified at the moment that my dreams of being a registered psychologist are slipping away. I urge the council to vote against the amendment. It's not in your best interest. Why not just give us a place to live? Offer us free counselling, therapy, healthcare, rehab if we want it, and let us decide if we want to participate. For those of us with learned helplessness, let them feel safe and let them live on the street if that's all they know. They're not hurting anybody. Your amendment is hurting them, and this is meant to be the world's most livable city, not the world's most vulnerable to the people in need.
I now call on Mark Towler to speak. Mark Towler.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor, Lord Mayor, members of the Council. I've tendered a written submission, which I direct your attention to at a later point when you have time to do that. I'll concentrate on three principal points, which are, to say the least, alarming, and to say the worst, downright frightening. Firstly, your process. At no point in the course of the development of your prior consideration of this up to December last year through an expert advisory panel and other means, and more recently through this process, at no point in any documentation is a single name of a current rough sleeper on anywhere on your list of persons involved, consulted with, informed by, related to, referred to, invited, attended, or otherwise given access to a process about their survival. That is the word that is on the table here, the survival of people on the streets of this world's most livable city. So my point is your process is fundamentally flawed and the whole proposal should be stood aside until that process is remedied. And by that I mean it must include homeless people who are rough sleeping in Melbourne and people they choose to act as their advocates. And I stridently and loudly proclaim here and now and forever will that that does not include the council to homeless persons who do not speak for, represent, communicate with, interact with, or advocate for the rights of people sleeping rough. My second point is this. You have made great note of a need to communicate with the public about the impact of, quote, donating to people sleeping rough. Two sub-points. One, where is the communication information campaign to the people whose lives you are tearing apart? When do they get informed other than through the Herald Sun, the media and other means to find out that today they are legal, tomorrow they may not be? And I draw your attention to a week, 2 weeks ago, where in 3 days they were about to be made criminals, then they weren't, according to you, Lord Mayor, and the next day they again were. The state government has weighed into this and expressed a view that they are fully supportive of banning rough sleeping. Minister Lisa Neville is on record as condoning this, as is the Chief Commissioner of Police. This is an outrage and it indicts this state and the machinery and apparatus of government. The final point I make at this point is this. 24.5 million dollars since May 11, 2016 invested by the state government of Victoria and this council. $24.5 million committed to be spent on saving, salvaging or otherwise topping and tailing rough sleepers into something you can accept. This is not good enough. If you cannot make this work with a bucket load of money, perhaps you should rethink your whole approach and start talking to the people whose lives you wish to redefine in your own image. People don't necessarily want a house. People live on the street. They call it home. Give them a break.
Thanks,
let
Mark.
Them live in peace.
Thanks, Mark. I now call on Homeless Persons Union Victoria. Did we hear that? No. Homeless Persons Union Victoria.
Hello, councillors. My name is Kelly. I'm from the Homeless Persons Union Victoria. There's nothing much that I can say that adds anything greater than what the speakers before me have said. We pretty much share the same sentiments in condemning these proposals, these amendments, and this education campaign that you're thinking of rolling out. But firstly, I'd just like to say that I'm disappointed that I did organise for an Auslan interpreter to be here this evening so that somebody who is currently rough sleeping had the opportunity to communicate, and that fell through. So I'd just like to make mention of that. But he has written out something that he would like me to communicate. His name is Jonathan Hardy, and he asks why a VicDef worker did not help him when he was homeless to get a house when he was staying on Flinders Street and a job. He said he doesn't do drugs. He's good. He's fit. Maybe he should move to the USA where he could find some work over there. Yes, once again, he doesn't do drugs. He's homeless, but he does live on the, he lives on the street. He goes to the gym. He eats well. He eats good food. Yes, but he's disappointed that he didn't receive any housing and health assistance when he was on Flinders Street. So the HPUV has made two submissions today. One was a bunch of interviews that we conducted with people sleeping rough that was submitted to the Royal Commission into Family Violence, and I'd like you to please take note of that. And the second thing we submitted was a petition that we've had going for a few weeks now. And that title of that petition is Public Space for All, Melburnians Against the Criminalisation of Homelessness. And in the 2 weeks that we've had that petition running, we've had something in the proximity of 674 people signing that petition and 80-something comments. So if you could please take a note of that before making your decision. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kelly. And now I'll call on Lisa Peterson. Lisa Peterson, to address the committee.
Thank you. While I was doing the research for today, I stumbled across the Melbourne for All People strategy, where goal number six states, Melbourne is a place where people are involved in civic decision making and where all voices are recognised, heard and valued. That's not happened to this community. For the last, 5 weeks, we've been hearing about our lives and what the outcome is going to be through the Herald Sun. That's not good enough. This is supposed to be a city for all people. Homeless people do count and they do matter. A couple of years ago, I was working for the Electoral Commission, signing people up to vote in the city of Melbourne. They are residents, people can vote, and they should have a say in the decisions that affect their lives. I'm on the Homelessness Advisory Committee. This has not even come through there. It really feels like a whole heap of captain's calls have been made and decisions because of the Herald Sun, and it really isn't good enough. I do ask that you defer making any decisions tonight until you have spoken to the community affected. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. I now call on Rachel Zbukvic, and I apologise if I pronounced that wrong. Rachel? No. I now call on Lucy Adams to address the committee. Thanks, Lucy.
Good evening. I'm the Manager and Principal Lawyer of Justice Connect Homeless Law, and I did want to start by commending the City of Melbourne for some of the progressive work and the collaboration that you have done in relation to homelessness and rough sleeping. Justice Connect has been proud to work with you on some best practice initiatives, including Project Connect Respect, Homeless Service Coordination and the Women's Homelessness Prevention Project. And it is in that sentiment or context of respect and collaboration that we must urge you to pause and not to proceed any further with the proposed amendments to the local laws this evening. Homeless Law is the only specialist legal service for people experiencing or at risk of homelessness in Victoria. We provide legal representation and social work support to about 500 clients every year. For over 100 of them, we can stop homelessness before it starts. But for 100 more, we're dealing with what is the unrelenting impact of the law on people who are living their private lives in public places. In addition, in 2013, I had the privilege of doing a Churchill Fellowship. I travelled to 9 cities. I spoke with 60 experts about the very issue that you are contemplating this evening, homelessness and the regulation of public space. And it is with this knowledge from direct work and from research that we know that a law that is this broad and a ban on camping that is this broad will push people to the outskirts of the city. It will exacerbate vulnerability. It will isolate them from services. A very similar law with very similar motivations was introduced in Denver, Colorado. A university-based survey of 500 people experiencing homelessness in that city was done. Two-thirds of them identified that they had moved to hidden areas and to less safe areas as a result of that ban. As the Council to Homeless Persons identified, there is a significant risk it will cause people to become caught up in the justice system as a result of fines and charges. We already assist 100 clients every year who get fines and charges as a direct result of homelessness. We don't want that to increase. I will have to reiterate, we are all on the same page here. Nobody wants people sleeping on the streets in the city of Melbourne, but we do need to focus on what works. We do need to focus on long-term housing. We need to resist the temptation to introduce a measure like this, which is reactive. It won't work. It won't deliver the solution that the community or the council is looking for. Thank you.
Thanks, Lucy. I now call on Ty Snow-Tear. I now call on Kate Brown to address the committee. Kate Brown.
My name is Bill Swaney. I am speaking on behalf of the Law Institute tonight.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm the chair of the Human Rights Committee at the Law Institute of Victoria, and I thank the Lord Mayor and the Councillor for the opportunity to speak tonight. The Law Institute of Victoria is very concerned about the introduction of these proposed local laws and these amendments, which will broaden the restriction on public camping in the Melbourne CBD and provide expanded powers to move on rough sleepers. Currently, camping is banned in Melbourne only if campers use a vehicle, tent, caravan or any type of temporary or provisional form of accommodation. However, the proposed change would expand this to prohibit all camping in a public space. The wording of this proposed change is very broad and could potentially capture people rough sleeping in sleeping bags or blankets. While we acknowledge that public spaces should be regulated to promote community health and safety, this should not be achieved through increased penalties and move-on laws that victimise some of the most vulnerable members in our community. Police and council employees already have extensive powers to address issues such as aggressive behaviour and public drunkenness. Moving homeless individuals away from Melbourne CBD will not solve the problems that creating homelessness and will merely move people elsewhere. People may be pushed out to areas that do not have adequate services, limiting their opportunity to access these services which they need. Moving homeless people out of the CBD may expose them to a greater risk of violence. The right not to have a person's home or privacy interfered with is a right protected by the Victorian Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities. The criminalisation of people living on the street for everyday activities can also raise other human rights concerns, such as discrimination or cruel, inhuman and degrading treatment. Introducing penalties for street camping will not solve current issues of housing affordability and other factors leading to increased homelessness. Relying on move-on and infringement powers to address issues of homelessness and poverty is ineffective and counterproductive. This approach imposes a significant burden on courts and police and results in highly vulnerable people becoming caught up in the justice system and exacerbating the difficulties that come from with homelessness and with poverty. There are other ways to address these issues. In this light, the Law Institute of Victoria welcomes the Victorian Government's announcement of a new emergency response package to provide housing and support for rough sleepers in the Melbourne CBD, and emphasises the importance of the City of Melbourne and Victorian Government continuing to work together with support services and agencies to come up with a long-term strategy and service-based solution to homelessness in Victoria. As the Lord Mayor recently noted, Melbourne should not be a city that pushes out homeless people, depriving them of access to services and endangering their safety. We call on councillors not to support this proposed amendment and instead to focus on enhanced service delivery and evidence-based models for addressing issues of homelessness, poverty and housing affordability.
Thanks very much. Thank you again to all of our submitters. I'm going to move a slightly different motion with an addition of 11.6. I'll give people time to read that. And I call on a councillor to second that motion, Councillor Sullivan. Thank you again to all of our submitters. This is not easy for anyone involved, particularly those of you who had the courage to stand up tonight and put your point of view across. Thank you for giving us your views. We've had a doubling of rough sleepers in the City of Melbourne over the last couple of years since the last street count. In fact, a 74% increase in rough sleeping during that time. In response, we've doubled our homelessness budget to $3.5 million. And I think the interest in this issue is actually in the long run going to be helpful, although it doesn't feel like it at the moment. But when you look at this local law and the recommended change to that local law, it is an extremely small part of the full suite of services that City of Melbourne and the providers have been working together to offer. So I thank Lucy for her comments around the collegiate partnership that has been implemented so far. I want to stress that I know there's a lot of concern about unintended consequences, and I think all councillors want to ensure that that doesn't occur, and that's why this would be released for 28 days of review, and we encourage that review. All of those submissions will be considered and brought back to council with a recommendation of a pathway forward. When we talk about homelessness, I think it's important, and many of our submitters touched on this, that no one organisation can solve it, not City of Melbourne, not the state government, not the federal government, not any one provider, but all of us working together possibly may make inroads into this issue. When you look at the current situation, City of Melbourne doubling its homelessness budget, and not just throwing money at the issue, as one of our submitters highlighted, which is really important, but thinking logically, objectively through what needs to happen to ensure a better outcome for those people who are sleeping rough. And largely that's a coordination of services, making sure that we were all working together in partnership and constantly evolving the response to what is actually a changing population from what it was 10 years ago. With the addition of 11.6 in listening to submitters, what we want to have considered alongside that review is will it work to have providers attend with local laws officers to ensure that we're doing exactly the opposite of what people have been highlighting and concerned about. This is not about arresting homeless people. This is about trying to get them onto pathways, whether that's housing, whether that's mental health assistance, whether that's substance abuse assistance. These are really, really complex problems. Again, there's not. With respect, we've listened to the submitters. Please listen to the debate. So with this, this is about the idea that no one, and I think Dave Burrows made a really important point. He said that you can't end homelessness by hiding it. I completely agree with that, but equally you can't end homelessness by not acting. And by having those homeless camps come together on the street. When we talk about the issue, the City Council also has a role in terms of other ratepayers in the city. No one of us has more rights than anyone else, but equally families, other ratepayers, businesses have a right to a safe city as well. So what we're dealing with is different sets of people within what is being seen as a singular issue. But what we've got is people who are genuinely in need, that need assistance. And then unfortunately, there's a group, a small group, who are actually breaking the law. And in that instance, what we have to do is ensure that we have a safe city. So as we progress this issue and we put this out for comment, what I do hope is that we do get that review, that we do ensure that this is a response which enables further intervention where we have serious issues, where we can get people on the pathways that they require to get them off the streets, because frankly, it's neither good for the person on the street or good for the city to have that issue. What I want to talk about now is the much wider issue, and I think this is where all of the councillors before you are struggling. 22,000 or 33,000, which numbers you look at, are either homeless or on wait lists. Again, City of Melbourne can't solve an issue of that magnitude. The state government has put in $400 million and $190 million towards domestic violence as well. I will say this, is that unfortunately the federal government is completely missing on this issue. And so we will continue to advocate to push this case. The Lord Mayor is personally pushing this case in Canberra to try and get the federal government to stand up and play the role that they should be playing in this issue. Councillor Sullivan.
Thank you, Aaron. It is humbling to see that we all care so much about this issue. It really is. In the past few weeks, I've spoken to many of you here today. I've read the outstanding Churchill report. Thank you, Lucy Adams. I've spoken to Janine Mahoney from Safe Futures, my good friend Jackie Siebel from Justice Connect, and Kate Colvin. And I thank you for your submissions.
Please continue, Councillor Sullivan.
I understand the points of view put forward by our officers and by our submitters today. I want to assure you of something. I want to assure you that we care.
Look, I know this is an emotional issue, but we've listened to submitters. Please give the respect to councillors to make their comments. I just ask you that. Continue, Councillor Sullivan.
The issue of homelessness is not merely a council issue. It is a human rights issue. Exactly. We've debated this. We've lost sleep over it. I mean, we're human beings too.
They're not animals. They're humans.
You're not the victims. You're the perpetrators.
With all due respect, I'm not screaming at you. Can you please listen?
Keep going, Councillor Sullivan.
I want to reiterate something. I want to assure you of something, that the City of Melbourne is not banning homelessness. Okay, it's not a crime. It's not illegal to be homeless. This is not what this is about. How we care for our citizens that are the most in need is a reflection of our society as a whole. And it's not about politics or portfolios or the Lord Mayor. We are actually all in this together. We agonise over this. What is happening in our streets? It's heartbreaking. I assure you that we have and we will be doing everything possible to help these people in need. If we fail on this, then we have failed. But I want to reiterate that this is about public safety. The very real fear in the world that we live in today, that it's dangerous to leave unattended items. It's about accessibility.
Excuse me, those in the gallery, we'll have to close the meeting if we can't be heard. I mean, it's...
I can join those people.
Can I just ask for your respect, please? Thanks, Councillor Sullivan. Any other speakers for or against? Councillor Leppert.
Can I take this opportunity to move an amendment? I will get back to the substantive motion depending on how the amendment is treated, but I move at this time that the following words be added to 11.1 after the words attachment 2, but with clause 2.3 removed, that is, without the broadening of current restrictions on camping in public places.
I call for a seconder for that amendment. Councillor Oak. Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. Again, I'll get to the substantive motion later. Let me just describe what the amendment is here. This amendment deals with what the local law says, not with how it is implemented. My worry is that the change to the definition of camping will catch anything and everything, and it has the potential to do harm to our most marginalised for the reasons that many of the submitters have pointed us to today. But more importantly than that, I want to point out that in the activities local law, as it currently stands, it is already an offence for a person in a public place to adversely affect the amenity of that public place or to obstruct any other person in or on that public place. As well as that, it's already a summary offence under state law to obstruct a footpath. Now, obviously, it is not desirable for that law to be enforced readily by police. We do not want homeless people arrested left, right and centre. That is not going to solve the problem at all. But I point out that our local law does deal with many of the issues that we've already been talking about today. The law already has quite a few discretionary aspects to it, and our enforcement officers always need to have an eye to the Charter of Human Rights when they're implementing that law. But the point I make is that because it is already an offence to do those two things, I don't see why we need to expand the definition of camping to, for example, to make it an offence for someone who is on their own with nothing more than a cardboard box and a blanket to be woken up by an enforcement officer at 4 a.m. and told to pack up their things. I don't think that that is the way the local law would be implemented, but it is possible to do that under the local law if this change goes through. So those are the sorts of changes I just cannot support as a councillor here and now. I don't want to send the local law out for public submissions with that broadening definition of camping in there, and I don't want our reputation to be that which of a city that has made it an offence to sleep rough in public, and I think that that is the perception of this change in the local law, and we need to battle that perception. The change is not necessary, and so my amendment strikes out the change to the definition of camping, and I urge my colleagues to support it.
Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. I also support this amendment, and I will also speak to the substantive motion after the debate of this amendment. I've obviously read all of the submissions, I've heard everyone speak tonight, and the most important thing that has been mentioned is a lack of clarity, or more importantly, the concern around the broadening of this definition of camping. I understand why we're talking about this tonight. I don't know why this recommendation from management has come to us. I understand that there is has been a request for us to look at our local laws or look at further things that council can do to assist with supporting services, supporting homeless people in our city. So if we're going to have a review, I hear, we haven't consulted with enough people, we haven't received enough information, and I can't support an amendment to our local laws going out with such concern about the unintended consequences. And so I prefer that we would start from a point where we have a broad agreement that we're going in the right direction rather than starting at a point where we significantly, in fact overwhelmingly, don't have a support of a starting point about the changing of our local laws. So I support this amendment to the recommendation in front of us tonight.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. Any speakers against? Lord Mayor.
I would just make the point that this is not to actually make a local law. Councillor just spoke about consultation further. All this does is put this out for 28 days so all of those people, including those with concerns about unintended consequences, can make their point and be listened to. I hear Councillor Leppert about the fact that there are other provisions. That's exactly what we're trying to avoid. The other provisions, including obstruction of a footpath, are summary offences and lead to arrests. This is exactly the opposite of that. It is not a judicial path. And that's why, to me, that is more important than saying you have other means by which you could do the same thing. Yes, we do. They're summary offences that cause arrests that put people in the judicial system. I just can't accept that, you know, that anyone, a councillor would say that we'd send people out at 4 a.m. to, you know, harass people in blankets. I mean, I just, you know, I'm sorry, that demeans the debate. And I'm sorry, as I say, if you want consultation, that's what this process is about, to say clearly, this is what we think might work, but you now have 28 days to make good arguments, which we will listen to. That is the process we're starting today, and that's why I can't support this amendment.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Any other speakers for the amendment? Any other speakers against? If not, I'll put the amendment to the vote. All those in favour? Councillor Watts, Councillor Oak, Councillor Leppert and Councillor Kiofa. All those against? Councillor Louis, myself, Lord Mayor, Councillor Rees and Councillor Sullivan. I declare the amendment lost.
What privilege makes
we now
me?
Go.
This land, if anyone's going to dictate who lives on it, it should be our first people, not people in suits sitting up there dictating the hope of all people.
We now move back to the substantive motion. Are there any other speakers for this motion? Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Look, I have genuinely agonised over the motion that we are debating tonight, and that's because I've had experience of homelessness in my own family with a brother-in-law who slept rough here in the city. I mean, we all know there are thousands of different ways in which a person can end up sleeping on the streets. In the case of my own brother, that was through drug addiction. And many a night I have travelled into the city here to pick him up. He's dead now. A story of someone who used a dirty needle, got a heart infection and passed away. So, look, when I look at this motion, the thing that ultimately sways me is that this is about assertive outreach to me. Bylaw officers are not about moving people on. They're about connecting them with homeless service providers. And the amendment which we've worked on today, which is part of that 11.6, will actually require a homeless service provider to travel with bylaw officers in acting in accordance with this bylaw. So it's actually about, in my view, us as a community being more assertive in helping people who need our help. So I'm voting for it.
Thanks, Councillor Rees. Any speakers against? Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. With my amendment not having been passed, I will vote against the motion as a whole because I cannot support part one of the motion. But let me put on record... that I do support the other five parts, some more than others, and I thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, for incorporating my suggested words as part six of the motion, which will create a policy for our consideration in future to guide the work of local law enforcement officers as they enforce the law in relation to homeless people, so that we can't have the sorts of examples that I talked about during the amendment debate. I make it clear, though, that that debate about the amendment was about what the local law said, not how the local law is implemented. And I'm sure, because I have great faith and trust in our enforcement officers, that the example I cited would never happen, and I think I made that clear. We've spent $2 million in December and allocated it to alleviate the problem that we've been talking about today. We need to give a chance to let those $2 million in additional funding have a chance to, flow and for the work that's been set aside for that $2 million to actually be productive. We haven't really yet seen the good work come through from that process, nor have we seen the good work from the additional state government funding. I think the legal and law and order approach that we're taking here is not is too premature. We need to give a chance to that extra funding, both from the council and the state government, and Deputy Lord Mayor, you've noted that the federal government is very much absent, and I agree that that's quite shameful, but we need to give the state and local funding a chance to flow. So I think that the local law change does undercut some of the good work that the City of Melbourne does do with homeless people. That point's been made today by many submitters and by many homeless service providers, and we do have a model that is best practice and recognised as being quite advanced and effective in many ways. But in my mind, the local law casts homeless people themselves as the problem, and it has been put to us as a necessary part of a suite of measures to tackle our increasing homelessness problem, but I believe that actually it does the opposite. It may work against those other good measures. I think that this proposal may originally have come as a call from police as well. I would have liked to have seen some written communication from the police as to why they believe that their powers, their tools are not adequate to deal with this problem already. I know that this is a council solution, not a police solution, but I still think that that would have helped this debate. And so let me just conclude by saying that I find myself agreeing with the Law Institute, the Community Legal Services, all of them that have provided submissions, the homelessness service providers themselves. There's that very important joint letter by six providers, three of which we are big funders of to do work in the City of Melbourne, and they are all telling us not to do this thing. And it will be seen as an attack on homeless people, and the local law changes are simply not necessary to tackle the problem. The last thing I'll say very quickly is that current homelessness crisis, I believe, as well as all of the other issues that we've talked about today, is also a symptom of the long-standing affordable housing crisis in Australia, which has been presided over by all three levels of government in decades past, and that affordable housing and supporting our homeless citizens with sustainable pathways out of homelessness is where we should be focusing our efforts and our funds, not in casting homeless people themselves as the problem by making a law and order solution as is proposed in the local law. So I'll be voting against this motion.
Thanks, Councillor Lippitt. Any speakers for? For? Yeah. Councillor Kaiapa.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. I acknowledge that this is a very sensitive issue. The Lord Mayor has been tremendous in his approach to managing the best way forward. Along with our other councillors, I care so much about the people affected by the circumstances that have created their homelessness in our city. Therefore, I can't vote in favour of this motion. I personally feel I need more time to inform myself.
Sorry, Councillor, you're against. Okay. You're voting, you're speaking against.
No. Oh. Against. Sorry. I commit that I'll work with the service providers and directly involve myself with the Rough Sleepers so I can better understand the situation, get a clearer view on the triggers and what needs to be provided in the support.
Thanks, Councillor Kaiapa. Any other speakers to the motion? Lord Mayor.
Thank you. We're a long way apart in this debate and I really regret that. I really do. So my proposal is not to try to persuade you of the reasons why I think this may help, because it is simply a part of the suite of things that we want to do. It is not, as people have suggested tonight, anything near a solution. We get that. But what I've heard tonight are some very, very positive ideas from the people who submitted to us. I've heard that we need safe spaces and a drop-in centre. I agree. Let's work on doing that. I've heard that homeless people need something like lockers. I don't think we provide that yet, but let's look at doing that as well. I've heard from people to say, we don't agree with you. Make sure your definitions are right. Make sure they are clear. I agree. We have 28 days to do that, and I will welcome your input around that. You've said don't increase imprisonment, and I agree. And that is why using summary offences and arrest provisions, I don't think are the way to go. And that's why this doesn't go down that track, doesn't even authorise police. It continues to be a City of Melbourne response, and I hope that response will continue to be one of compassion and working with people who are sleeping rough to help people out of homelessness or help them where they are with the needs they have at the moment. I've heard you say that the process you're unsure of and that the voice of homeless people and rough sleepers needs to be heard during this debate. And I will work to make sure that that is the case in this 28-day period and those voices are actively sought and heard. I've heard you say that the state and federal governments need to be lined up on the same page, and I agree. And I pledge to work to make that happen as far as I can. And the final part is, and I hope this doesn't invite derision because I mean it, there is no intention to push people out of the CBD. No intention to do that. And therefore, I will look at all of those things that you have suggested, look at the way that we need to implement this. If we are wrong, I will concede we are wrong. But at the point, well, opinion doesn't quite constitute data, but anyway, the offer is there. But at this point, I will support this motion.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Watts.
I will speak against this motion. What I need to make clear is that I know, this council and the previous council were unanimous in understanding the need to address, to ameliorate the dire and demeaning situation that so many of our citizens find themselves in. The situation is untenable in a first world, allegedly the most livable city in the world. Something has to be done, but this motion is not what needs to be done. It's utterly regrettable that a council with the wisdom to establish, actually I think it was the last council, the wisdom to establish a homelessness advisory group, failed to consult with that group before devising an essentially provocative and distressing motion that's before us now. It was just unnecessary. The people who've spoken today raised that point, and it occurred to me. I spoke with officers about it. I'm not sure quite how our processes went awry. I believe had that happened, we would have listened to those with expertise. We would have listened to those with experience on the street. I personally don't have it, but that's why we have advisory groups. So, as I said, it's regrettable that this is the cart as before the horse. Now, some would argue that there are 28 days in which people can submit their arguments around this motion. I've just discovered today, and I look to the office to confirm this, that those who've made submissions will need to submit again. It seemed to me to be a reasonable situation that the submissions that were made already should be taken into account, but they are not going to be, I am advised. So all of you who've worked so diligently to put your thoughts together to argue your case will have to do it again. Now, my preferred course of action would be a deferment. It's not going to happen. It was a futile idea of mine as I came to make decisions about this motion. The motion, by the looks of it, will proceed, but not with my vote. Thank you.
Just to close very quickly, the submission process is a statutory process which we can't actually alter. So you will have to submit your submissions again, but I think many of you had them on email, so it's a matter of hitting send and they'll be duly considered as they have been tonight. The Homelessness Advisory Group, this is exactly where this recommendation will go to, and that's the start of this consultation process over the next 28 days. I don't think that it will undercut the good work that has been done, because that will continue. As the Lord Mayor highlighted, this is a council solution, not a police solution, as did Councillor Leppett, and that's a really important part of this, is we don't want this in the summary offences area. This will be, like everything, it's about how the outreach is implemented, and I think the service providers, council officers, are doing a fantastic job. But when Councillor Watts talks about, I don't think we need to do this, the fact remains that 78% increase in rough sleepers in the City of Melbourne, something more assertive needs to be done to get people on pathways out of homelessness. So I'll put that to the vote. I now put that to the vote. All those in favour? Councillor Louis, myself, Lord Mayor, Councillor Rees, Councillor Sullivan. All those against? Councillor Watts, Councillor Oak, Councillor Leppett and Councillor Kiofa, I declare that carried. I now call on Councillor Rees to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the planning portfolio.
We now have four reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio. Might pause for a moment. I understand this is a fairly boring procedural matters we're now going to talk about. Okay, there are four reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio. Agenda item 6.3 is a ministerial referral, TPM 2016-4, 51-65 Clark Street in Southbank. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? I think the answer to that is no, but I now call on Tony Penner from the Southbank Residents Association, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Thank you for your patience, Tony, in waiting for this item.
No, thank you, councillors, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, who's not here.
No, he's not.
Thank you for the opportunity. Tony Penner, South Bank Residents Association, as we've heard. Look, I don't have a lot to say on this development. I think it's probably a unique development in the sense that it's probably maybe the only one that we'll see, but it may not be, maybe in South Bank, where it's able to tick all the boxes under C262.
Yeah.
And it has essentially done that, and it's probably one of the only developers that rubbed their hand together when C262 came out going, oh, well, bring it on. We've got 24-1 plot ratio. Obviously now under C270 we've got 18-1, so C262 is the preferable planning scheme to have it evaluated under. What I do want to say, obviously I'm not going to object to this application. There is nothing to object. What I would like to say is I would like to commend the council officers with their efforts to obtain more public benefit. We know that there's no formula, so to speak, to the public benefit when we're increasing the floor area uplift. But they have identified 600 Collins Street as a benchmark, and they've pushed to get more public benefit, of which I believe there will probably be a minimum of $1.6 million contributed to the City Road Master Plan. So I'd like to commend the officers for their efforts with that. However, I do have one question. I would like to ask, what effort, if any effort, was made to address the 10 three-bedroom apartments in this 565-apartment development? There are only 10 three-bedroom apartments. We've always been pushing to make South Bank family-friendly, and while I understand there's no legislation or no ratios for what it should be, I was hoping it might have been addressed under better apartments, but it's not. Did the council officers try to encourage this developer to go beyond 10 three-bedroom apartments? Out of 565, it's not very many. We need to see more three-bedroom apartments in South Bank to encourage families. It's the chicken and the egg. If we don't get those family-friendly apartments in these developments, then we're not going to be attracting families to the suburbs. So that's the only thing I would like to throw back to the officers / council in regard to this development.
Tony, the only thing I'd say is that officers note that it is generally compliant with the better apartment guidelines, and one of those guidelines is a flexible floor plan that would allow future amalgamation of apartments into larger apartments. And so I think the officers were satisfied that even though there were 10 of 500, which is about the percentage which is built throughout the city, which is regrettable, we agree, there is nevertheless the future capability for people to create 3- and 4-bedroom apartments because of the better apartment guidelines.
Okay.
Thank you, Tony. Look, I certainly would agree with you that, I think you would agree that the statutory planning officers at the City of Melbourne have a really tough job. There's a lot of development pressure around the city, and they work very hard to try and ensure that that development happens in an appropriate way, which takes account of communities. And with this particular development, there were some significant features that we were able to get agreement on, including a driveway block link between them.
No.
Some I was actually I might just call on Officer Jane Birmingham to invite her to respond if she would like to. Officer Birmingham?
The Lord Mayor is correct, in fact. We do encourage the provision of 3- and 4-bedroom apartments, but that is all we can do. And the fact that it has flexible floor plates that allow people to combine 1- and 2-bedroom apartments during the purchasing process is something that we encourage as well. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Okay, I now call on a councillor to move the motion.
Happy to move a slightly amended motion. There it is. I move it.
Should I read? Okay. I move a motion that they accept the amendment.
No, he's moved it with the amendment. You second.
I second the amended motion. Councillor Leper.
And thank you, Chair. Let me just briefly say thank you, Tony, for your submission. You certainly entertained our planning team leaders no end. The negotiations that have been undertaken to get us to this point are considerable. Obviously, this is an application that was made under C262, not C270, but the public benefit that has been arrived at by virtue of going above the C262 plot ratio is good. Is a good example of what can be done. Now, this is, of course, a ministerial application, so let us hope that Minister Wynne endorses all of the conditions that are set out here without exception. My amended motion, the only effect of it is to fix an error. There is no substantive change to the conditions.
Thank you, Councillor Lippert. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? No. Well, I'll now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, raise their hands. The motion is passed unanimously. Okay, we now move on to agenda item 6.4, ministerial referral TPM 2016-26. This is for the property 552 to 578 Lorimer Street, Port Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? See, the answer to that is no. Therefore, I call on a councillor to move a motion. I will move the motion. Can I call on someone to second the motion? Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Would the seconder like to speak to the motion?
I support the recommendation from management.
And I do not oppose its introduction.
Are there any other councillors who want to move, speak for or against the motion? No. Okay, well, I will now put the motion to a vote. All those in favour of the motion, raise your hands. Thank you very much. That motion is passed unanimously. Okay, agenda. We now move on to agenda item 6.5, planning permit TP 2016-225, which is for the property 69 Hardiman Street, Kensington. Councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No. Okay, I now call on Peter Sweeney, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Peter Sweeney, thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, councillors. I also represent Paul and Andrea McAlpine from number 49, so this is basically from number 43 to 51 Hardiman Street. I received notification of this agenda item last Friday. As a result, I'm only in a position to make a quick written objection, which I've sent in. If this was not accepted, I'd submit that due to the late notice, this would be an unfair proposition. I originally objected on this application on the 11th of the 5th last year and have heard nothing in response. The application before you is unchanged and my original objection attached remains unchallenged. I do not intend to repeat my original objection, which will summarise it. The issues remain. The proposed build is too high, it's out of scale and character, it invades privacy and provides overlook of neighbourhood properties, it will definitely impact on local parking and negatively impacts current traffic and infrastructure problems. This application is now over 6 months old and there's been no infrastructure change in that time, but traffic and parking issues have continued to increase. Larger scale properties such as this to the west of the creek will severely exacerbate these issues. Basically, in conclusion, it is too high and provides insufficient parking and will result in unreasonable amenity impacts on nearby properties. The proposed building is to be constructed with materials inconsistent with most properties in the local area. The building is out of scale with the neighbourhood and the planned setbacks in no way prevent overlooks of the surrounding properties. While I have no objection to the site being developed into apartments, I do object to the scale and size of the project. It appears the developers are trying to squeeze as many apartments into the site as possible to maximise profits, with little or no concern of the impact that such a development will have on the surrounding residents, community and infrastructure. I personally believe that west of the creek and freeway there should be a three-storey height limit to any development to help maintain the character and amenity of the neighbourhood. This sort of development makes more sense east of the creek and freeway.
Please conclude, Peter.
This area of Kensington, west of the creek, has a very strong community ethos and a village atmosphere which residents are concerned will be destroyed by inappropriately large-scale and high apartment blocks. For these reasons and objections, we respectfully request that Council refuse to grant a planning permit for the proposed development. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. I now call on John Glossop, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, and I remind him to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, Lord Mayor and councillors. Just in relation to the submitter before, I'd just like to draw your attention to the conditions that have been prepared by your officer, and in particular to direct your attention to condition 1B of council's of the council officer's recommended conditions. That condition is to deal with the issue of overlooking that was raised by the previous submitter. My client, who is the permit applicant, has no objection to that condition, and we would expect to comply with that in relation to the issue of overlooking. In relation to car parking, there are 8 car parking spaces associated with this development. There's a statutory requirement for resident parking of 8 spaces. The reduction sought by the permit applicant is for 1 visitor space. There's, I think, according to your officer, substantial capacity in the area for visitor car parking to occur here, and we would concur with that advice. In relation to this matter, you might have read in the officer's report that, in fact, this application is substantially the same as a planning permit that was issued by this council some time ago, and that permit dates back to 2011. Unfortunately, my client allowed that planning permit to lapse, and hence I'm before you tonight seeking permission for what is substantially the same building that was approved by a council at least once and has been recommended for approval twice now by your own officers. In relation to building height, I'm sure you're very familiar with Amendment C190 to the Melbourne Planning Scheme, and you've obviously spent substantial resources, time and capital on that amendment. This proposal is consistent with the requirements of that amendment. Couple of points I'd like to make in relation to the maximum height recommended by that or allowed by that amendment. We are 1 storey lower than the preferred height limit and 3 storeys lower than the maximum height limit. Our street wall height is 1 storey lower than is allowed by the amendment, and in our submission it is completely consistent with the design objectives of that amendment, and importantly will help to implement the Arden-Macaulay structure plan. We agree with the advice of your officers and we
please conclude your comments shortly.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, John. As Chair, I'll move the motion and I call on a councillor to second the motion. Thank you, Councillor Leppart, for seconding the motion. I don't need to speak to this matter, but would the seconder like to speak to the motion?
Oh, can I just acknowledge all of the submitters? This has been a application that has been made at the tail end of a very major planning scheme amendment, and some of the objectives have been caught in the midst of those very complicated procedural back and forths, but I do take the argument that has just been made to us, which is reinforced by our officers in the report, that when you consider that the adopted planning scheme amendment allows for a preferred maximum height of 6 storeys and an absolute height of 8 storeys, when you consider that the preferred street wall setback is 10 metres, when you consider what the street front wall heights are for Hardiman and Little Hardiman, then there's only 1 discrepancy between the plans and what we adopted only in August, and that is to some of the setbacks to, I think it's mainly the 4th level. But the built form is less than that which is otherwise envisaged in C190, and I do need to point out that C190, of course, was subject to extensive statutory consultation processes and submissions and testing at panel. The panel came back and simplified the height controls for us, which has made things a little bit less clear here than I think they otherwise could be, so I'm going to blame the panel, but I always do that. But there are no grounds, is the point I'm making, for this committee to push back on this application in terms of bulk and height. It does comply with the scheme. It does comply with the adopted version of C190. And so I think there's only one correct decision to make here, and that is to support the work of our officers and the recommendation from management.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? Okay, given that there are not, I will now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, raise your hands. I declare the motion carried unanimously. The next and final item is agenda item 6.6, which is a liquor inquiry. It's for the European Beer Cafe at 118 to 122 Exhibition Street, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? The answer to that is no, so I, as chair, will move the motion. I call for a councillor to second the motion. I've got a couple of seconders there. Okay, Councillor Leppard, Deputy Chair of Planning.
Yes.
I do not need to speak to this motion. Councillor Leppard, do you want to speak to it a second?
I support the recommendation.
Are there any other speakers to this motion, for or against?
I'll speak for it. Look, this is a part of the supporting of the nighttime economy, a very good operator, considerable conditions on the licence, no detriment. I would just note, though, that the only neighbour to this licence extension is, in fact, at 104 Exhibition Street, which is Liberal Party headquarters. And I think if I didn't support an extension to liquor licensing hours, given admin committee and policy assembly meetings, I would be lynched in my own party. And therefore, I'm delighted to support this extension of operating hours.
Look, as mover of the motion, I might reply on that. And just simply note that that one of the amendments that is sought here to the licence is actually a reduction in hours of operation on Anzac Day, and even the big drinkers of the Liberal Party would surely support a reduction Absolutely. In alcohol Absolutely. Consumption on that most solemn of days. Absolutely. Okay, are there any other speakers in favour or against the motion? Okay, well, I'll now put the motion to the... I will now... Deputy Lord Mayor, no, it's been a long night already. I will now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, raise your hands. I declare the motion carried unanimously. And I now call on the Lord Mayor, Robert Doyle, to resume the role of Chair for the remainder of the meeting.
Thank you, Councillor. This concludes the reports from management. There are no items of general business. Any items of proposed urgent business? In that case, we provide also a 15-minute period at the end of our meetings for people to ask questions. Would anyone like to ask us a question? In that case, could I thank members of the public, management, and staff for their interest and attendance, and declare the meeting closed at 7:17 p.m.